ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that on one's 250th birthday, there should be a celebration. I'm Claire Nichols, and on The Book Show, we're raising our teacups to Jane Austen.
Why Austen? What is it about her?
Authors Colm Tobin, Karen Joy Fowler, and more will explore why, in 2025, the Austen effect is bigger than ever.
That's quite incredible.
Search for The Book Show and look for Dear Jane wherever you get your podcasts, or hear it now on the ABC Listen app.
So how much coffee have you had today, Priya?
Today is a poor day for me to answer this question. I've had more than my norm because I didn't sleep well.
Oh, so you're juiced up.
Juiced up. It's still less than what a lot of patients tell me they drink. So I've had probably 3 shots of coffee today.
All right. Well, I'm up about 5.
Oh, wow. No yeah. Palpitations, anxiety? Would you sleep tonight?
No, I'm just sort of, I think it probably just brings me back to normal, really. This is a sign of addiction, isn't it?
It's doing nothing for me today.
Anyway, coming up on the Health Report, we are going to be talking about whether or not coffee's bad for your heart. And the results of the study might surprise you.
We're worth a listen today. I'm Priya Alexander on Wurundjeri Land.
And I'm Norman Swan on Jagera and Turrbal Land.
Also on the show, findings from a clinical trial may reshape how children with asthma are treated.
How far are we away from using blood tests to screen for cancer and monitor it? So instead of doing painful biopsies, can you just do a blood test? We'll find out more about that new technology.
In the news, though, there has been the results of the PFAS inquiry handed down with 47 recommendations for Australia when it comes to these what are known as forever chemicals.
Yes, polyfluoroalkyl substances. There's thousands of them in the environment. They take a long time to break down. There's been a panic about them. Some have actually been banned, and we've come to that later than others. PFOS and PFOA, we've banned them in Australia. But this is a Senate inquiry which has looked at this, and they've made 47 recommendations. We can't really go through them all here. A lot of it is actually about biomonitoring and monitoring in the environment. Some of it is about the availability of testing, and that will be controversial, A, expensive, and B, what are you going to do when you find out? Because you may have PFAS in your body which don't do you any harm. Not a nice idea, but don't do you any harm, and you'll create worry and concern in the community. So the 47 recommendations, they've taken it very seriously. The question is, what do you do from here? And it's already becoming political, with the chair of the committee calling on the Labor government to do something about it.
But they are recommending standardised guidelines for drinking water across all states and territories, and this watchdog, as you said, to actually give people more reliable information. But these are chemicals that are in non-stick cookware, firefighting foam.
That's right. And some of these products, it's relatively straightforward to remove these forever chemicals, sometimes not. Some of these forever chemicals look as though they're safe, but they haven't all been tested in animals, much less humans. You know, PFOA, PFOS could well increase the risk of kidney cancer, but the rest is just unknown. And while you might think that there was a sceptical tone in my voice a little while ago, I mean, I think that on the Health Report, we talk a lot about the precautionary principle, which is if stuff's out there, could be doing you harm, you're not quite sure, and it doesn't do you any harm to remove it, then remove it.
But it can be costly. I'm not sure. I love my non-stick cookware. This is the first time that I've thought about potentially replacing it. So if I have a new kitchen.
All the programs I've made on it all these years has had no impact. Now that a Senate inquiry is reported, now I'm going to believe
it. That's not what I'm saying. I can't possibly take every recommendation, Norman. I think that's the thing. People are so bombarded with information that you have to pick and choose what you take and what you can actually implement. And it's costly to change your cookware.
It's very costly. But let me tell you, when you do and you start cooking on cast iron, you'll wonder, why didn't you do it before? An omelette is the way to get a perfect omelette.
I'll keep you posted. But perhaps from one chemical to another, and this is another area I think people are bombarded in, is ultra-processed foods or UPFs. And I think people will have heard a lot about them this week because Lancet, which is the big medical journal, has released a 3-part series reviewing ultra-processed foods and the public health implications of them. and they've involved 43 global experts. And this is a huge discussion. There's lots of elements to this, I think.
And what they're trying to do here is eliminate what the global food industry has been doing, which is casting doubt on the risks of ultra-processed foods and creating confusion in people's minds.
So, and heavily marketing. Let's be honest here. We're talking about huge corporations. These are multi-billion dollar companies who have very cleverly and heavily marketed these products. They don't label always what is in them. And that's a part of this series. Experts are saying we don't necessarily know what complex ingredients are in the products, what's been put in there to extend the shelf life, how much it changes the nature of the food. But look, I'm of the view, and this is where we may differ.
Oh, what are you going to say?
Automatically disagree. I think everything has a place. I'm one of those, everything in moderation is okay. Some ultra-processed foods have a place. Bread, by definition, can be an ultra-processed food. I try and buy the one with seeds in it for the kids and I.
Margarine.
Yes, so some things do have a place, and there are some experts of this 43 who've said in discussion of this series that we shouldn't necessarily be lumping things like bread and flavoured yogurts in the same group as sugar drinks or reconstituted meals, that there needs to be some kind of way to divide the ultra-processed foods. But I guess the thing here is we're talking about not just sometimes having, you know, today I had a cookie. I needed the cookie, Norman. The cookie's fine.
It takes up 60% of your diet, which in some countries it does.
In Australia, the discussion has been that almost half of what Australians are currently eating is an ultra-processed food diet. And it's really cleverly marketed. It often looks like health food. It's these protein bars. We don't know how it changes all these emulsifiers and things that make it feel good in your mouth and make it tasty and sit on the shelf for a long time. How does it change how it interacts in the body? And it really replaces whole foods because you eat those, you're less likely to eat the orange or the banana or whatever else it is.
You might say, well, protein powders, bread, that sort of thing. So it's a wide range, as you say. So why are they bad for you? They're bad for you because you are consuming products that are not necessarily high in micronutrients. If they've got micronutrients in them, they're not embedded in foods where you're getting all the chemicals that go along with these micronutrients. You know, you can put all the micronutrients you like inside food, almost like a supplement, but you're not necessarily going to absorb them and you're not necessarily going to use them. You use them in food, often that's been cooked, and there's been a chemical reaction in the pot, and you get these bioactive compounds. So we should be eating as much as possible food that we've prepared ourselves or that somebody else has prepared, but it looks like food, tastes like food, and not trust some factory process to put it in for you.
I don't think, though, the solution is, and often went around this discussion, and I've already seen it this week, people start to go, just ban ultra-processed foods. And I don't think that's the solution because there are so many things that impact what we eat, food and diet, including socioeconomic, education, geographical factors. There are people living in food deserts. We know that the people who tend to consume more of these foods tend to be financially disadvantaged. And so just banning it just widens the gap in terms of food security and access. And so that can't be the solution. And what these experts are calling for is better labelling of food, more regulation of the industry. This industry spends $13.5 billion on advertising every year, which is four times more than the entire operating budget of the World Health Organization. That's just baffling.
Yeah. It's extraordinary.
They're very effective. So, look, this all ties in. Really what they're calling for, these experts, is consumers need to be upskilled. Packaging needs to be much clearer. There needs to be more regulation. But it all kind of ties in as well to the Health Star rating in Australia, doesn't it? Which we've talked about before.
Well, that's right. And you can get distortions of those ratings because some ultra-processed foods can score quite highly on them. There's an enormous amount of work to be done here.
And of course, the new dietary guidelines are coming out next year, which is going to try and tackle some of this, because earlier in the year, we covered the fact that you might be eating within the current dietary guidelines and eating what they say is too many ultra-processed foods.
And just given that, you know, one of our favourite topics is GLP-1 agonists, and so every Health Report listener now knows what we're talking about, the Ozempic-like drugs used for diabetes, now weight loss, and coming down the line are oral versions of these drugs, which look as if they're fairly effective. Eli Lilly has sponsored a paper in The Lancet of an oral version of these weight loss drugs called Orforglipron.
We don't know how to say it yet.
Orforglipron is the name of the drug. This is a placebo-controlled trial. So against placebo, it has weight loss. We've yet to find out how it performs in relation to other injectables.
And worth pointing out that this was studied in people who had a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes and who were also living with overweight and obesity. And not only did they seem to have a weight reduction in the intervention arm in the group who took the oral drug, also a lot of their other measures like cholesterol and sugars and things also improved. But again, watch this space.
And remember, most of these trials are sponsored by the drug companies and they're much more likely to present positive results. So keep listening to the Health Report for a slightly skeptical view of the world.
A measured view. We're not skeptics. Measured.
No. Well, I'm a skeptic. You may be measured. You keep me under control, Priya.